Council convene at 7:21 PM. Clerk will call the roll. Here.
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 Councilman Foley, if you can please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the
Next, we have general communications, announcements of congratulations, condolences, or community events. First, if we could all have a moment of silence for recently passed Senate President Dominic Ruggiero. Does anyone else have any congratulations, condolences, or community events? Councilman Lattiser.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to request a moment of silence for the passing of Pope Francis.
Does anyone else have anything for general communications? Seeing none, we go on to executive communications, which there are none. Next, we have acceptance of minutes from the council meeting held on April 7th. Is there any opposition to approving said minutes? Seeing none, so approved. Next is public comment under Rule 41. After general communications and prior to the consent calendar at the last regularly scheduled meeting of the City Council each month, there shall be a period of time not to exceed 30 minutes during which citizens may comment about Warwick City government issues subject to the following stipulations. The total period of time for public comment shall not exceed 30 minutes. Comments need to be brief in order to allow as many citizens as possible to participate. Each citizen signed up and present shall have not to exceed 5 minutes to speak, provided, however, that if more than six citizens are signed up and present, 30 minutes will be split evenly amongst speakers. Time shall not be transferable amongst speakers. The topics for comment shall be issues directly affecting city government. City Council members will not respond to questions during the public comment period. The public comment session will terminate at the expiration of the earlier of all speakers concluding their allotted time for 30 minutes. Waiver of this provision requires a unanimous vote of the council. First individual on the list is Barry Cook. Just when you get to the mic, even though I already said your name, please make
Thank
sure
you, Barry
to
Cook,
it.
Ward 1. I'm here again to suggest that this rule should be amended to allow for comments between the council and people who are speaking to the council. I keep hearing that the open meeting law prevents you from doing that. Well, I'm not a lawyer, but but I don't agree with that. I think it's common courtesy that when someone comes to the microphone to speak to the city council about things affecting the city, there should be a time when a city council person ought to be able to respond, acknowledging the person who's here. If it only is a thank you, Mr. Cook, we appreciate your comments, I'll see you after the meeting. Or thank you, Mr. Cook, I'll take your comments under advice. Please put some time aside, call me when you get a moment, and we'll meet to discuss it. That's all it takes. I'm not asking anybody to go into a 10-minute diatribe. It's just common courtesy. If we come here, you ought to respect us for coming. You might not like us, you might not like what we have to say, but we should get an acknowledgement that we exist. The last time I came before the group, there was a husband and wife here complaining about flooding, drastic problems with flooding, and nobody, not one councilman, acknowledged them. Not one councilman said, that's terrible. Not one councilman said, see me after the meeting. Now, I saw our council president, who was silent during this time period, address them as they walked out. But you know what? That's not the way to handle it. So again, I doubt you're going to amend this to my liking, but it ought to be amended so you at least acknowledge that we're here. That's all, period. Now, there are several things on the agenda that I'm not going to stick around for, but I would like to comment on them. There's a resolution here requesting the General Assembly to review and consider adopting amendments to the public records law. As I recall this from the last meeting, one of the things that I object to is that it suggested that the state law be amended that the 1 hour rate of $15, in other words, you do 1 hour's worth of investigation, it's $15. But after that, each time you review something, it's $25 an hour. So I go to the city hall, I submit my request to the city clerk, it comes back, they've done it, it's $15 for the first hour, and now you owe me $100 for the next 4 hours. That's $115. Now, I don't know what the intent of the state law is, but it certainly isn't to my benefit, or the benefit of many city residents of Warwick, to have to come before the city asking for information that's pertinent to that person's request. And now, not only do we have to pay for it, we're going to be paying more, assuming that we go by the first hour. That is not the way you protect our rights as citizens of Warwick. Quite frankly, that oppresses my right, because now I have a pressing need for information. My wife and I are on Social Security. I won't give you her age, but she's older than me, and we're both in our late 70s. So now we're both on Social Security. I'm still working part-time as a security guard at 78 years old. Now I'm working to supplement my income. Now I'm an involved taxpayer. I do go to City Hall now and then and request information. So now, in light of everything else that's going on, I'm going to have to pay more if this passes the General Assembly. Now, I know you can't control the General Assembly, but you don't have to side with the General Assembly. You should not vote in favor of this amendment. It doesn't do anything to help the taxpayers of Warwick. And I think I read someplace along in the resolution itself about the primary goal of blah, 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 is to protect the rights of citizens of Warwick. This doesn't protect my rights. It makes it harder for me to deal with the public. I also note that in going back to the rules, you're going to start the meetings at 6:30 if these amendments are passed. One of the things you're going to do is start the meetings at 6:30 and not 7. So I thought about that. If that's supposed to be a plus, it isn't. Many people work until 5. They get home. They've got to prepare dinner if they're going to eat it in. Or if they're going to go out, they have to go out to eat dinner. So instead of coming here at 7, now you're asking to come here at 6:30. I don't know how that's a positive. I think that's a negative. It doesn't help anybody who's a working person get to the council meetings. Now, I'm retired. I can come to all your meetings whenever I choose to. I don't work except part-time, and I don't have to work. I can call out sick, and no derogatory problem for me. I don't understand the 6:30. I know I'm not going to get an answer tonight because you're not allowed to speak to me. You're not allowed to answer me. So I guess what I'll do is I will write to certain council people. And when I wrote about the Rule 41, I said that I got responses from 8 people. I was wrong. Councilman Sinapi never responded to me at all. I sent him 6 requests. He ignored all 6.
You have 30 seconds, Mr. Clerk.
Thank you. Mr. Foley never responded to me either. I guess I'm done because my time is up. I did want to comment on one other thing, but I guess I have to leave it alone and see to it at another date. Thank you.
Next on the list is Darlene Netko.
Darlene Netko, Ward 7, lifelong resident of Warwick, homeowner, taxpayer, voter. I was here for the earlier subcommittees, so I just want to officially, for the general session here, to say that I am in favor of the $50 million bond for the schools and for the leftover to go to facilities such as Mickey Stevens. I also want to, maybe this is the appropriate place to renew my objection to the whole concept of the Budget Commission. It is now in place. I do want to know when it's going to meet. I hope it is a public meeting because if it is during a time that I'm not working, I hope I can be there to watch them in action. Since the school committee did pass a budget and they have a plan for paying down their debt, hopefully this Budget Commission will not be in action for very long, especially since I believe the city has to have a budget by June 1st. Now, on a different note, our council people get knocked a lot, but I do want to thank Councilman Sinapi, even though he is Ward 8 and not Ward 7, because through his actions, the gas leak on my mother's street finally was fixed. It only took, I don't know how many years and how many calls and how many visits from Rhode Island Energy claiming nothing was going on when you could clearly smell gas in the cul-de-sac, but it was finally fixed and we no longer smell gas in the cul-de-sac. Now, my mother's next issue in Ward 8 has to do with the condition of some of the historic cemeteries. I know that there's a cemetery commission, and I have told her to call. I've looked up the number to call, but you know she's 87, going to be 88. So just in general, a plea to make sure that our historical cemeteries are taken care of. I know there is one that we know of that the people who live next to are kind of using as a place to dump their leaves and other lawn detritus, and that's not good. And of course, I don't want my mother to stop and get involved with that because you don't know what could result. But if in general, the city, who's ever in charge, could take a look at the historic cemeteries and make sure that they are treated with the reverence that they deserve. Thank you.
Next up is Richard Langseth.
Richard Langseth, Budlong Farm. I want to show my appreciation to the mayor for his interest in open space near the shoreline. He wrote a letter explaining how the city of Warwick is advocating open space near the shoreline. And of course, you know that I've been involved with this for many years. So I appreciate his comments on that. But we have to go one step further than what he suggested. I don't know if anybody read the Providence Journal on Sunday. Above the fold, a big story about coastal access. Some of my friends have introduced legislation to the General Assembly about open access and rights of way, including parking. You may recall that I've been saying that the private Buttonwoods ordinance that I've been protesting for a few years does not have a hearing. So if you don't have a hearing on an ordinance, that ordinance is void. And I think the city clerk and I have come to the conclusion that there has been no hearing on that. But interestingly, at the same time that process was going on in 1984, at the very same time, the city council passed an ordinance on Sylvia Drive, which is a coastal resources right of way. And this is a very wide street. And what somebody did, Mr. Brophy or somebody like that, put no parking on Sylvia Drive, which is a very wide street, and it goes to one of the finest beaches in Warwick. And those signs need to come down. I know that city council members have been working on eliminating no parking signs from rights of way, and we really need to get on that, because there are many new people moving into Warwick, and these people are expecting it to be a shoreline community with 39 miles of shore, but there's no place to park. And then you have the in quotes private Buttonwoods, which is obviously not private. And we've been going over this with the CRMC, and now I've made a motion for summary judgment, which will be heard on May 27th. And what's going to happen is the Buttonwood Beach Association is going to come back with a city solicitor letter, which was an attack on me in 2003, which is totally ridiculous. And the Harbor Management Commission has asked the mayor to look at that, and hopefully we can get that resolved before the May 27th. In addition, I don't know where we stand with this private Buttonwoods ordinance, but it's been like a year and a half, and I think there's some traction there. I think we all understand that the city doesn't have any jurisdiction over the streets of Buttonwoods. It's the Buttonwoods Fire District. And so for the city to be passing ordinances saying that the streets are private, when they're clearly not private, they're being maintained by a fire district, which is inherently a public entity. A fire district, let me give a little history here. There used to be an Appanog Fire District, and there was a gentleman up by where Robert Half used to be, which is now around CVS, and he was saying, oh, I'm not in the fire district because the water can't get to me. And the
you
Supreme
have 1 minute, Mr. Langsa.
Okay. And the Supreme Court made a determination that fire districts can only do public functions. They have absolutely no private interest at all. So here I am embroiling you in all of this Buttonwood stuff, and it goes on month after month after month, and it's not going to end until we do things like change that ordinance, which is void at the start, and do things like the city solicitor opinion, get that straight. That was a personal affront against me, by the way, and we really need to straighten it out, and I thank you for your time.
All right, that concludes public comment. So pursuant to Rhode Island General Laws 4246(5), subsection A2, this public body will convene an executive session regarding pending litigation, specifically FAVA v. Warwick, case number 1:19-CV-00582. And so I move that the city council go into executive session pursuant to Rhode Island General Laws 4246(5)(A)(2). Regarding the pending litigation, FAVA v. Warwick, case number 1:19-CV-00582. Is there a second? Seconded by Councilman Ricks. All in favor? Any opposed? Oh, I'm mandated to do a roll call. Clerk will call the roll. Clerk will do a slow roll, preferably.
Mr. Sedabin? Mr.
Dealways? Yeah.
Yes. Mr. Gephardt? Mr. Kirby? Mr. Kirby?
Yes.
Mr. Lanza?
Yes.
Mr. Muno? Mr. Napa?
Yes.
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 Oh, okay. Excuse me.
Council now stands in executive session.
First up, PCR 34-25, a resolution requesting the General Assembly to review and consider adopting amendments to the public records law as presented in 2025 H5457, Councilman Napa. What's your pleasure here, sir?
I would like to just present on this and request a motion when I'm done.
Sure.
Comment.
The floor is yours.
So this is an act related to a House bill that was relative to costs for public record requests. Just wanted to address a comment by the public, I believe it was Mr. Cook, earlier tonight to clear up an ambiguity. There is no charge for the first hour currently, and there is no charge for the first hour of records research and retrieval from either the existing law or the amendment. So that the $15 an hour does not apply, or any fee does not apply to the first hour of records research and retrieval. The amendments that are proposed by the House are to increase the staff cost, hourly cost for staff from $15 an hour to $25 an hour. And this is, again, not in an attempt to unduly burden the public or any taxpayers. It's in an attempt to bring the reasonable costs of goods and services and time on task and staff costs up to a reasonable rate at this present time. $25 an hour is certainly well within the reasonable realm. There are about 30 other states, just to put it in perspective, that charge actual costs. And this legislation as it stands is only staff costs plus any copies. And my clerk, our clerk tells me that essentially there are no copies. It's just time on task. So in the state of Rhode Island, we're just charging for actual time on task, less that first hour of records retrieval. So that $25 an hour really isn't 25 when you stretch it over the hour to hour and a half of maybe 2 hours of time that it's actually time on task by staff. The second amendment that the state had proposed is that anyone making document requests under the applicable law shall pay any outstanding balances owed to the city prior to making a follow-up request. And to clarify that, any requests made within a 30-day period are considered one request. So I know that there were some concerns by constituents and colleagues that it would preclude someone from making a follow-up request, but as long as that request was made within the 30-day period, they're considered the same request. As it stands, it's not a huge sum, but there is a sum of money, I believe roughly around $3,000, that is owed to the city for records requests that haven't been paid. I think it's a reasonable approach to say, if you're going to make records requests and demand time on task from city employees, that if you owe a bill, you pay that bill before you make your next subsequent record request. It's really in an effort just to bring legislation, effort to bring costs and reimbursements to the city up to a reasonable rate to reflect how much it actually costs for manpower and for our clerk and other departments' personnel to do these records retrievals. I think it's a reasonable ask. I would suggest and request that you approve.
Thank you, Councilman. Very helpful context on this one. Any members of the committee have questions? Councilman Muto.
Thank you, Chairman. As far as the record request, what is it, the public or is it another entity or entity types that are driving the costs for our records?
Great question. That was something I didn't actually touch on that I meant to. My understanding from our staff and administration is that it is the abuse by commercial entities, such as large personal injury law firms, insurance companies, that are driving the large majority of record retrieval in an attempt. Essentially, what it looks like to me is when they're working on contingency fee, that they're sort of using city resources to reduce what they have to pay their own staffs for those same records retrieval. It would appear that it doesn't overly burden the taxpayer. It wouldn't have a large effect on requests that are coming from the taxpayer. This is directed mostly at the abuse of public records requests by commercial agencies.
just a follow-up there, and excuse my ignorance on this. Is there the ability to have differential pricing for commercial entities versus consumer?
So I would assume yes. There are other jurisdictions across the country that do apply that same standard, where there is one rate or standard for a commercial entity and there is one rate or standard for taxpayers and individuals requesting documents.
And just a follow-up, because I'm a little confused. So this is not a ordinance for Warwick. No. This is what is up at the General Assembly being proposed.
This was proposed in February by General Assembly, and it's just a resolution in support of that. That would then obviously filter down to us if it does pass through House and Senate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Any members of the committee? Councilman Lattice, sir. Councilman Lattice, I'm gonna pause. Councilman DeLuise.
I received about a dozen emails from people in my ward voicing their concern about the cost of accessing public records and being able to get, you know, they want transparency in government, all this other stuff. So what Councilman Muto was saying, could there be, I think you answered it already, but could there be a larger fee per hour for these law firms that are burdening, you know, our city employees, as opposed to a lesser fee for an individual, you know, lives in the city that just wants to have, like, hey, I need a plat map or something like that, which is very simple to get. So why should they have to pay the $25 an hour fee if it's only going to take a few minutes? So I don't know, maybe you can explain that better. I think that the corporations that are abusing it should pay the higher fee for the time.
So I guess compounding question there to address that, because it's a state proposed legislation, we can't make any amendments. I believe if I would defer to the solicitor, we could probably suggest split fee.
I would suggest that the current Rhode Island general laws relating to the Access to Public Records Act does not provide for that type of split arrangement at this time. That's the General Assembly's purview. This is a request this resolution is seeking to support, you know, reforms that are proposed to it. Those are something that's probably outside the scope of the current pending legislation. But that would be something that the General Assembly would need to address. We don't have that authority to at least do that through this mechanism at this time.
And I think to address your second question, Councilman DeLuise, simple request that you're alluding to that only take a few minutes, half hour, 45 minutes, there is no fee for the first hour. So requests, and I'm told by our clerk that there are a large amount of requests that she can fulfill in under an hour, and she does. There is no fee unless they're requesting copies, and it's a per page fee if they want hard copy.
Right.
Okay. So for the most part, the requests by the general public are not affected.
So the time fee begins after 1 hour?
After the first hour.
Okay.
First hour is free of charge.
All right. That makes a little more sense.
Councilman Lattice, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I also had some conversations and pretty much received the same feedback as Councilman Napper said as to where the problem really lies. I happen to welcome the requests and comments from our community activists. We had two of those folks with us this evening. One is still here, Mr. Cook, Ms. Comar. We have community activists that, thank goodness, they're digging in and doing the things that are very helpful to us, Mr. Cody, Mr. Cushman, Duran, and Mr. Fife. Matter of fact, Mr. Cushman did a post just last week that resulted in a significant change of financial conditions. To increase the burden, the financial burden on the residents of Warwick who are looking to gather this information, who are willing to spend their time to do this, and of seniors who can't afford to be paying those types of numbers for information that, for the most part, should be readily available, is nothing I'm going to support. I would, however, be in total agreement based upon the information that I've been provided, and this is from people in the know, that the entities that Councilman Napa referred to, realtors, insurance companies, attorneys, and I'm sure the list is quite lengthy, who put this burden on, and I'm only going to speak for our city clerk, on our city clerk because they don't want to do the legwork, or they're being dependent upon our clerk and the clerk's staff to do this research and work for them. That's ridiculous. But I can't support adding an additional financial burden onto our own residents who reside in the city. They pay taxes. They're entitled to receive answers to their questions and concerns. To burden them, in my opinion, with additional financial costs is not fair. With respect to, you're not going to get any more information until you pay for the first set of information, there is some validity to that. However, there's also an exception to that. When the public information request is first sent in, I believe I've got this correct, that the recipient has 10 days to respond. Or on the 9th day or the 10th day, could request an extension of, I believe it's as much as 20 days. And somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what I believe it is. So now you're at the 30. And they're going to be prevented from submitting an additional request because they haven't paid for the first one that they haven't even received answers for. Because I also understand that in some cases you pay after you receive the information, in some cases you pay upfront. So if the problem lies with people or entities outside of our residents here in the city of Warwick, put the financial burden on them. Don't put it on the residents here in the city of Warwick, who, unless, again, someone disagrees, it does not appear to be the problem. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councilman.
Councilman Ricks.
Thank you, Chairman. So I agree with the sentiment of some of my colleagues here on being reluctant to raise this cost. When I was taking a look at this cost, doing a little research into it, I'm going to have to double check the precise dates. I have to dig into some further information to get a more precise date previous amount, well, the current amount, that is, initially went into effect, because the public laws posted on the General Assembly website don't actually go back that far. Public laws only go back something like whatever it was, 25, 30 years, more or less. I'd have to double check. I had researched this a few weeks ago. But suffice to say, when I did the calculations, the proposed increase, even if the last time that this was increased was the most recent time that it possibly could be, based on information I have available. The proposed increase would not even keep up with the cost of inflation. Moreover, it seems that most types of public records that would be subject to this, especially nowadays and going forward into the future, we're really talking about electronic records for the most part. Granted, there are some exceptions where there are some areas where up until very recently, there were substantial amounts of handwritten records. Thankfully, recent administrations and the current administration have taken steps to more and more make sure that we rely on electronic records here as opposed to the old handwritten notes, which I can only imagine with the handwritten notes. I remember years ago working in a file room trying to tell numbers that someone had scribbled. Not fun. So, anyways, going forward, more and more focusing on the electronic records, it becomes faster to retrieve those. So, for all of those reasons, I think that this proposed increase is reasonable, especially since those organizations that much more typically actually get hit with the current hourly rate are those that, for instance, insurance companies, attorneys, etc., that are basically using the city resources in that manner, and the city should get compensation for it. So, is this perfect? No, I don't think that there is necessarily a perfect solution here, because like so many things, there are pros and cons to the way that we're handling this. Just like any other fee that the city charges, there are those areas where we wish that we could make a little exception here or there because we like that particular use, or that, or we think that our Warwick residents in particular should face a lower fee and those out-of-towners should face a higher fee, but that's not how any of this works, for better or for worse. So I do support this resolution for those specific reasons, while understanding the concerns of those who are opposed to it. One other little item here to address. Typically, we don't see the city council spending a lot of time considering resolutions up to the General Assembly. Obviously, the General Assembly is going to do its own due diligence, and how much attention they pay to our specific resolution in support of or in opposition to what they're voting on. Well, we want to try to use our influence sparingly in that way instead of necessarily trying to always tell them what to do, which I can imagine might get old fast. However, here I do see it as appropriate for us to be considering this because this directly relates to city fees, city revenue. So I'm comfortable taking a vote on this particular resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Any other members of the council have anything to add? Councilman Kirby.
Hello. I'm kind of confused. If you're a resident of Warwick and you're going to pay the same as someone outside or a business, whatever, for a copy, to bring your waste, yard waste and everything to the city, where you bring your leaves and stuff or tires or whatever, if you're not a resident of Warwick, you can't dump your stuff there. So we got two different things here.
Mr. Chairman?
I think the point the councilman was making is that there are certain instances where we limit requests from outside of the city, such as dumping, and drawing the parallel to that. Did you want anyone to answer that? Or you just...
No, but do you follow what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Councilman, I would just add that this is a unique situation where the state law sets a certain standard, and whereas something in that nature, we have a little more latitude to set city policy, whereas in this instance, the law is uniformly set for state application, so we don't have discretion in that light.
If the state law should set their rules and the law there, do we have the right to change it for our city?
No, I would suggest they control what this law says, and so we could ask them similarly to do other changes to it, but that's similar to what is being asked tonight, is looking at one aspect of potential changes to it that's currently before their body. But it would require an act of the General Assembly to make any change, whether it's this one or anything like you're just suggesting.
Thank you, Mr. Solicitor. Any other members of the council? Members of the public?
Actually, I don't think your mic's on.
It was, I saw it read earlier. I'm not sure if it's.
Hi, Michelle Comar. I have some experience with the Open Meetings Act. Worked on an amendment a few years ago. Amendments are hard to pass because it has to pass the Senate and the House. And they kind of work independently. My experience with the payments for requested documents, this is a statewide law. So you can't, it'd be difficult to say Warwick residents should pay this. You probably should say residents within a municipality should pay something versus commercial entities from anywhere pay something else. My experience with the city of Warwick is, thank you, Lynn, they're very responsive to Open Meeting Act requests, public records requests, I should say. Where I have an issue is some of my friends deal with state agencies. And it seems like, oh, our records are in the archives. It's going to take us 10 days to get it or something. Like, we can relate to an hourly rate because you're working people, you know what the minimum wage is. But we can't relate to how long it takes someone to go and find an existing document. I'm very well schooled. I'm going to be asking for something that exists, not something I want tailored to a certain format or a table. It's just give me a copy of what you have. You ask for it electronically. It doesn't take much time. But it can be used as a deterrent when you're dealing with state agencies, and they all know the squeaky wheels. And they don't want to give up the information. They're going to charge you a couple hundred dollars. And these are existing records. And how can we refute? These should be available. They should be in your file. I can't see why this is taking, you know, many hours to retrieve. So I think it's a problem when it's used as a deterrent and when the public doesn't have a means to find out why it's taking so many hours. And again, this is not City of Warwick, they're great. This is more on the state agency level. I just looked this up on the State General Assembly website. It says it's up for a hearing tomorrow, but I didn't see the calendar posted for tomorrow. Representative McNamara is a sponsor. I'll be contacting him now that this is to my attention. And I think it needs to be revised such that residents pay a different rate than these commercial entities that are overloading personnel. I had one other comment about this too. And I can't remember it right now, but McNamara is a sponsor if you want to touch base with him. And I thank you for your time on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Kumar.
Thank you, Michelle.
Any other members of the council or committee, any other members of the public wish to speak? Oh, Chief of Staff.
How you doing? Bill Facendi, Chief of Staff. Not to belabor the point and to continue with Councilman Knapper and Councilman Ricks's points and somewhat to Michelle Comas. The city clerk is the recipient of the records requests, and then those get disseminated out to the other city departments. I see all of the public records requests, and I think today alone they received 12 or 13, and they are range from body cam footage from motor vehicle accidents to building permits from 1999 to present, engineering drawings for West Shore Road, drainage drawings from West Shore Road or Post Road. The amount of records requests from individuals, residents, constituents is getting smaller and smaller. They're also driven by AI, inundated with records requests that are not related to anything that a constituent has an interest in the public good. They're mostly people trying to, as Councilman Napper or Councilman Rick said, prevent or reduce their overhead in doing the research, paying someone $30 an hour to come down to the clerk's office, and they get it for an hour for free, and then it's $15. So they're saving money. Our records are not all kept on site. Some of them are stored elsewhere, so that if there is a delay, that could be the reason. So they have to physically go to the site. But this is a piece of legislation that is well worth it, and it may deter some of the AI and some of the less lazy business owners that want to just get it for free or close to free.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing no one else, any other members of the public? I'll entertain a motion.
Request a motion to move favorable action.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Okay. Moving right along. PCR 45-25, a resolution requesting the General Assembly to amend RIGL 44567.2 regarding property tax classifications for the City of Warwick to better stabilize property tax payments. Chief.
They're requesting, the administration is requesting this be held till the May 5th meeting.
I have a motion to hold.
Motion to hold PCR 45-25. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. PCR 16-25, resolution amending the rules of the Warwick City Council for the 25-26 term. Council President Sinapi.
So Solicitor Walsh was kind enough to go through the rules and do some cleanup, mainly regarding any instance where the rules had previously tried to state individuals who we had no purview over that they had to do certain things. So I go, the city clerk shall, and then I can insert language here. That's not something we have any power to require. And that was littered throughout the rules. So all that, I believe, was removed by Solicitor Walsh. Thankfully, he cleaned that up. He also cleaned up some issues that are no longer relevant, such as the wetlands rule, I believe. Thanks to Ms. Comar, actually. Yep, good point. And yeah, it's mostly cleanup. So any questions? I'm happy to immediately punt to the solicitor on it.
I have one question just right off the bat. Thank you, Council President, for the introduction. Just do we need to do any sequencing here? Because on page 6, line 25, it indicates the meeting start time to 6:30. Is that just a, well,
we have another item that will be considered right after this. That is a resolution kind of setting those times as well. But it's, I think one piece that's missed is the, at the start of Rule 15, you're, unless noticed otherwise, that we will start at 6:30 rather than 7. So we have previously, with much notice, put like the budget public hearings are set for 4 p.m. on Monday, the 20. So unless it is so clearly noted that we're, it's a shift of the default from 7 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. is the proposal. This move is similar to a proposal in Councilman DeLuise's resolution that we'll also have before the committee tonight that adjusts not just the council start time, but also the committee potential start times.
Okay.
As far as sequencing, if it turns out this passes, but the other proposal doesn't, we can amend on the floor. to change this accordingly.
Okay. That sounds great to me. Members of the committee, anyone have any questions on the rule changes? Councilman Muto.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll start somewhat general. I understand we need to do some cleanup and some housekeeping, but I guess if you could give me some clarification first on the change of the responsibilities of the clerk, because my understanding is that the clerk is the official record keeper of the council, and I'm just a little concerned by that type of change in the language, since it's been there for decades, and why all of a sudden that has changed.
Sure. One of the requests that the council president asked me to take a look at is to streamline language that effectively is not really in the council's direct control. So these are our rules of governing ourselves. We cannot say department member such and such has to do certain things at certain times. It's not really our scope of authority. We can set expectations of what is prepared for us. The clerk's office is the intermediary between the two branches of government. So we are not necessarily looking to change responsibilities, other than there's one example about Rule 31 pertaining to the council liaison handling council appointments. The council liaison is our department, essentially. But otherwise, it's not intended to change what the clerk's office is doing. It is intended to just clean up the language to set the expectation, whereas right now it reads, the clerk shall do X, Y, Z. It isn't necessarily in our clear directives that we can do that.
So today, is the clerk doing what is in the rules? And are we changing the job descriptions?
We have no authority over any job description, any employee except one, and that is the liaison. We have no authority over any other to give directives about what employees do or what their job descriptions are. So we are not proposing to change anything. We still expect and hope the wonderful performance that the clerk's office does in assisting us with preparing and executing the meetings and retaining those records. But we are trying to declutter our rules package. This at one point was, I believe, beyond 20 pages. And with all of your help, we may be able to get this to a more manageable place and let Robert's rules kind of gap fill, which is something that the council president has worked on over many years. But this is an intent to just streamline things, not necessarily recreate the wheel or shift burdens from one entity to another.
Right. Yeah, part of it is this doesn't apply so much to the new people, but a lot of, especially prior iterations of the council, take for granted all the things, not just the clerk, but the city does, just because they're not required to do a lot of the things they do for us. And previously it was memorialized here as if that meant anything. It never meant a thing. I don't know who put it in originally, but it can cause problems, such as then if those things didn't happen, you could have members of the public calling the clerk's office saying, you didn't do it, it's all your fault, you're required to do it, and they're not. Not to mention a city council member could call and do the same thing. So this helps make it clear, or at least less unclear, regarding a lot of those activities.
So I get that, but I guess my concern is we're shifting at least the total responsibility to somebody else without more resources.
So we're not, because we can't. We never had the ability to set those responsibilities, and we still don't,
the rules,
which is why we can't shift them either.
The rules may have been overstepping their direct authority, and so we are trying to right-size them to match where we think there's a delineation of powers between.
I get that part. I guess my challenge is, even though we overstepped our authority, the job was being done by another person. Mm-hmm. And now we're taking that away and piling it on somebody else. That's my concern.
So we're not piling it on to anyone else. Everything will basically be status quo. And in fact, some of these rules will now matter, whereas before they didn't. For instance, any requirements that the city clerk or the city shall provide, blah, 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 by a certain time. That meant nothing, and there was nothing to enforce, as opposed to some of the changes now where some of them will say, the city council will be provided, or we cannot hear XYZ unless they are provided these things within a certain time frame. That rule actually has bite to it. Now it actually has to be followed. So now we're actually making it so some of the requirements and duties that the city was doing now actually have to be done, as opposed to before they could say, well, we didn't feel like it.
Okay.
Granted, they haven't done that, but you get it.
I'm not buying it, but I'll move on.
Is there a particular rule
that has come up before, just so you know, as far as, yeah, for instance, for appointments where certain things weren't provided to us? Yep. It's like, well, we didn't have to. That's right. They didn't.
Yep.
Now they will.
All right. I'm just not comfortable with it yet, so I'm not prepared to.
And so bear in mind, if there's a concern regarding actual duties and whatnot, it could be addressed elsewhere, maybe even via ordinances, mm-hmm. but that's where we would have to deploy the power. We can't do it via the rules because the rules don't work that way.
All right. The other part, and this is a couple of spots throughout that just raised my eyebrows because I have a difficult time reading all the materials in the time allowed now, and it seems like we're shortening a day here and a day there, and those extra days really mean a lot to me to really get through a lot of the stuff. So the reasoning on that?
We had varying deadlines that did not match. Some were, and effectively they were all, regardless of what the rule said, the Open Meetings Act still gave us the last ditch window of opportunity. We propose here streamlining those things to all meet that, but it does not mean that we will not maintain the delivery of materials, you know, such as when the bid packages get finalized and shared with you, when ordinances and proposed PCRs and PCOs are drafted and disseminated to everyone. The intent is not to just drop all of this at the end, but it is intended to just have one deadline that is enforceable and mandatory. And that is this fourth day concept, which effectively is Thursday for a Monday meeting. Which matches more explicitly an Open Meetings Act just based on the day of the week that we happen to convene.
Okay. All right. So here's a great example of we don't intend to do that, but now we have that extra day. Is instead of giving us a little bit more of a burden for that extra day, let's make it Wednesday versus Thursday. So all I'm saying is we're changing the rules to give us the ability to go later instead of holding ourselves accountable to getting the information a day earlier. So I'm really going to be stuck on this one just because, you know, I know I'm a freshman here, but it takes me a long time to read all the crap you guys send me. And I need every minute possible. So
and all, you know, with all candor, my only preference is that whatever we do, that it's consistent. So that way you're not stuck trying to remember why the date for this one's this, for that one's this. Mm-hmm. So if more is necessary, I don't really have any objection to that, assuming it's logistically possible, because if we're trying to propose something that the city clerk can't do, then there's no point. But yes, if a larger deadline for all the dates is preferred, I don't really have a preference for it. Although again, I would want to make sure the city clerk had the opportunity to weigh in and or evaluate it. Same with the solicitor, because they both deal heavy with the deadlines, not to mention the liaison.
Yeah. I'm just raising the objections, but obviously we need to be able to actually deliver on what we're trying to do. So I'll reserve the rest of it.